Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to you with your host, Venger Satanis, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in, everybody. I'm T.C. Downey, a.k.a. Beast Zeno, and this is my co-host, Venger Satanis. Venger, how you doing today, man?
Doing good. What's up?
Just driving along to work, man. My usual, what's become my usual Saturday routine.
Yeah, so, you're working weekends now?
I've been working weekends for, forever. I work Friday, Saturday, and then I usually take like a Sunday, Monday, Tuesday combo off. I like having that one weekend day that everybody's just kind of leisure, and, you know, they're all busy going to church and stuff, so you can hit the parks and, you know, chill out in nature, let the kids play. Enjoy some fresh air, and there's really not an abundance of people to kind of muck up my, my space. So I enjoy that kind of thing. It's actually really pretty fascinating when I think about it, because I only spent the first 11, 12 years of my life living in a rural area. The rest of the time I've lived in what would be considered major city. And yet somehow I always feel like I connect more when I'm at a place that's surrounded wholeheartedly by nature. So
I think everybody instinctively, or most people instinctively feel that way. I think it's, you know, being around people, I think it's just ordinarily stressful and creates anxiety, because what are people except, you know, machines that you can't trust with their own agenda, you know, milling about, doing their routines, and whatever. And I don't know. I can't feel safe in a large crowd, because who knows what the fuck's going to happen. I mean, humans are unpredictable. So I think when you're just alone with nature, or just around a couple people that you know well, I think you automatically feel more at ease and more tranquil, because you don't have all these machines running around doing God knows what.
Yeah, I can understand that, although I must honestly admit that I've never felt unsafe amongst a large group of few people. But that might be in part because I'm a little bit of an egomaniac, so I tend to have full confidence in myself and trust my ability to sense when danger is coming my way.
Right. Well, I mean, the stress or anxiety or unease that I'm talking about isn't necessarily, like, danger. Like, you think these people are going to turn on you any second? Not exactly like that, but you got to be aware of yourself, aware of your surroundings, because, you know, be mentally somewhat focused, and you know, you never want to completely let go and just not be aware of things when you're in a giant crowd of people, because, you know, things can turn around in just a couple seconds, and you know, you could just be accidentally crushed, or you know, something like that, or you see a couple of people next to you that are doing something that irritates the shit out of you, and now all of a sudden you've got to deal with that, and you've got to, like, suppress certain emotions. And I don't know, just large group settings, I think it takes more energy. It draws more, you know, draws more stuff out of you. That's my opinion. I don't know if other people probably feel the same way, but.
I'm certainly not trying to derail your argument there. What I was simply stating was my own personal process. On the other hand, I mean, I've seen situations where people have been injured in large settings, you know, and not unintentionally. I can't remember. There was a particular rock band that came, I believe, to Tampa some years ago, and in the crowd trying to push forward to get closer to actually touch these people, a couple of people were trampled underfoot. So I can understand that.
What's that? Happens every once in a while. I think that happens every once in a while.
Yeah, I caught it the second time. I'm sorry, man. Now, actually, it kind of reminds me. I was watching the other night for actually the first time. I've never really sat down and watched this movie before, but I thought it was pretty fascinating watching it the other night. Do you remember the movie The Rules of Engagement?
No, I don't think so.
Samuel Jackson and then Tommy Lee Jones are the main characters in it. Tommy Lee Jones plays a military attorney whose friend from service back in Vietnam or North Korean time, I'm not really sure which period it was, I believe maybe Vietnam, he's put on trial for misconduct, murder, and a couple of other things because while protecting the American embassy overseas in an Islamic country, he opened fire on a crowd and ended up killing a bunch of women and children along with men. And the claim was that they were unarmed, but what he said was that the crowd was actually firing at his men and had already killed his men. So, but the point in which this movie expressed that relates to what we were actually talking about is there's a point in the movie where Tommy Lee Jones goes back over and, you know, he's investigating to see what's going on, and he comes out of this embassy that's now all shot up and everything, and as he comes out, this crowd begins to form around him. And as they're forming around him, all of a sudden one person shouts murderer, and they start actually really invading his personal space and trying to grab a hold of him and keep him there. Now he, of course, you know, clicks into fight or flight, and then he goes for flight. And as he's walking away, you see them follow, and as they realize that he's getting further ahead than they would actually want to go to chase him, they then back off. So, it seems to me that the parallel is just interesting because you really don't know what's, you know, in the mind of the mass. I mean, that also brings me to the movie Gladiator. I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Gladiator, but there's a point in the movie where they talk about the mob being a blood-hungry monster. I think that still remains true. People, when they're in large group settings, still want to see, you know, they want to see horror and disaster, murder, mayhem.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. Going back a bit to what you were saying, I haven't seen Rules of Engagement, although I did see that it was on last night. In fact, it attracted my attention because usually on Monday nights, I watch this TV show called Rules of Engagement with David Spade and this other actor, Warburton, I think, who's in Seinfeld. And it's a comedy. It's just a half-hour sitcom. But
Right. But
that's funny. But speaking of Gladiator, which, yes, I have seen, but it was a good movie, but I'm not a huge fan of Russell Crowe. And I don't know. I've seen it once. It was good, but you know, I've seen 300 a couple more times, and I think that's a little bit better. But along those lines, I saw the season finale of Spartacus, Blood and Sand, which is on the Starz movie channel. And I've watched the entire season now, probably about 12, 13 episodes, something like that. And last night was the season finale. And oh my God, that's the best show ever. You know, if I could put stock in that TV show, I would. If I could, you know, marry that TV show, I would. Because it is, you know, it's definitely Avengers Satanist recommended. It's like such a great fucking show. It's, you know, I can't even like begin to describe it. Just so many levels. It's awesome. Got, what's his name? John Hannah, I think. Actor from Four Weddings and a Funeral. Got Lucy Lawless from like Xena. A couple different actors, gladiators. And since it's on a movie channel, it's got nudity, it's got, you know, bad language. You know, people are talking about Jupiter's cock all the time and getting fucked up the ass and, you know, stuff like that. And, God, so violent and bloody, just blood everywhere. Sometimes, you know, someone will do like a kill shot and they'll literally, in CGI, cover your television screen in blood and just have it slowly like dripping down. And I'm not one for like CGI, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, either give me real like concrete special effects or nothing, but this is cool. And yeah, it definitely gets an A+. But anyone that wants to watch Spartacus, Blood and Sand, I had completely forgotten about it today until you mentioned Gladiator. And I was just like, oh my God, I got to tell people about the show because it's phenomenal. And the season finale was so unbelievably awesome and like surprising and hardcore that I was just like, holy fuck. Like, I can't believe, I was watching the whole episode. I'm like, I can't believe they're doing this. Or I can't believe they're going there. It's just like, it was unbelievable. So I'm totally buying the DVD. I know most people out there don't have Starz. I don't know if you can watch it on the internet at some point. But, yeah, I would totally recommend the DVD when that comes out probably next fall. I don't know. But that's definitely going on my recommended list.
Awesome. I'll, let's recap since last week what's happened, because last week we had Jason King out on our show, and
yep.
I think that he was an absolutely phenomenal guest. A lot of people have this misconception of Jason King it's based mostly on fact, but it's misconstrued and I believe truly understood. You know, they face the fact that he spends so much time and focuses so much effort on, you know, crushing other people's ideologies and pretty much, you know, really putting things to the flame, if you know what I mean. And I think that they don't realize that is inherent in his philosophy. That's an important piece of his philosophy. You know, it takes a certain type of man to constantly be pulling things into question and seeing if they actually measure. You know, and I think that's what he's doing. He's saying, you know, I've weighed this and it doesn't measure. Now, that doesn't invalidate it as being inappropriate for other people to go after, and as a matter of fact, you know, he always lets you know that this is his take on it, you know. But, you know, is he just, you know, some arrogant jackass that wants to talk shit about everybody else? Or is there more of a refined method to it than meets the eye? But that's, I guess, what I want to throw out there.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a healthy amount of self-reflection in his thoughts and in his work, where a character like P.D. Valentine or someone like that has probably no self-reflection at all. He's probably never taken a good look at himself in years or ever. So, yeah, I totally am on board with Jason King being not only a good good person to have on last week, but an interesting guy, and I think he's got a lot of good things to say, even though he is quick to debate and, you know, throw arguments in people's faces and, you know, get a reaction and question people's ideas. I think it comes from a spirit of wanting to get at the truth and wanting to come to something deeper rather than just being argumentative or just being contrary or an asshole like a lot of Satanists or a lot of people are.
Right. I happen to completely and totally agree with that, obviously, but I want to expound on it a little bit. I mean, anybody... I'm sorry. Anybody who, anybody who wants to go home and cry to their mommy after somebody's really, you know, questioned and pointed out, you know, things that are maybe incongruent or not cohesive in your own personal philosophy, that person really needs to grow the fuck up, you know? I mean, if somebody questions you, that's good. That's going to lead to strengthening the vines, if you know what I mean.
Yep, I agree.
I mean, my whole thing is this. If something works for you, that's great. But the minute it doesn't work for you anymore, throw it the fuck out.
Right. I think a lot of times people can't see if a thing is working for them or they're not looking for that in the first place. They're comfortable with a certain routine or a certain behavior or a way of operating, and that's just, you know, they're not even thinking like, oh, is this still working for me, or has this stopped yielding fruit? They don't
even
bother to ask themselves that, and I think that's a huge thing right there. That, you know, constantly ask yourself, like, you know, is this working for me? Is this not working for me? You know, do I come at it from a different angle? Do I still want the same things that I wanted a year ago? You know, have I grown? Have I, you know, has my ambition evolved as well as myself? You know, maybe I should give up this tack and take a completely different route. You know, you always got to question stuff like that and keep an open mind.
Sure, and if you're not doing that, you're not being honest with yourself. You're basically allowing your mechanical self to control what you're doing versus, you know, everything being a conscious action.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the other things that I want to talk about last week's show, and this may take up a good portion of our show, I don't know, but you and Jason King both made a point that immediately warranted some questioning on our forum, the Cthulhu Cult forum. And that is, you guys were both talking about feeling that you had grown beyond the need for use of ritual magic.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, the obvious is there. You guys have both experienced it. You both have used it in the past. Is it something that works for you any longer? Well, obviously, if you feel like you've grown past it, then it wasn't working for you any longer. And I don't think that when either of you said this, your intent was to tell everybody, hey, this is stupid, don't do it.
Right.
I think that you guys... I'm sorry, please.
Okay. Yeah, basically, in the beginning, I think that, you know, going through the whole, you know, using rituals, especially using other people's, like, pre-written rituals, in the beginning, that's, I don't know if it's necessary, but I think it's a good idea, and it's a good, you know, building blocks towards something greater later on. in the beginning, probably for Jason King, definitely for myself, and I'm sure for a lot of other Satanists, you know, black magic practitioners, left-hand path people, chaos magicians, whatever, you know, actual rituals where you, you know, you sit down in some sort of room or chamber or you stand and light candles, you got your wand, and you're saying these words. I mean, I think in the beginning, that the bulk of your magical repertoire is stuff like that. And I think that's great. But eventually you come to a point where that gets less and sort of falls by the wayside in favor of a different kind of magic, a magic that's done in your daily life, you know, in the streets. And it's not one giant, focused, concerted effort that expends so much of your energy. What it is expending just a little bit of energy throughout your entire day and consciously act and knowing your will and working it, you know, throughout your day, your life. You know, doing a little bit at a time, doing it consciously, and that's a different form of magic. And that's, to me, that's a little bit more powerful than the other stuff, than the full-on rituals. I guess if I wanted to make an example or a comparison, I guess I would compare it to like diet and nutrition. You know, you can take one day out of a week, and that one day you can eat, you know, basically perfectly. You know, you can eat lean protein, you get your healthy fats and, you know, complex carbs and, you know, not too much, maybe just above maintenance, you know, if you're trying to bulk up, or just under maintenance, if you're trying to lean out. But then the other 6 days of the seven, you just kind of eat whatever you want. And just, you know, maybe it's a lot more crap, or, you know, maybe you're drinking a lot of soda, or you're not getting that much protein in your diet, whatever. So that's kind of ritual, using the old school, like, satanic rituals and, you know, ceremonial magic and greater black magic and stuff like that. But what I'm trying to do is trying to eat, not perfect, but definitely sensibly and consciously, at least 6 out of the 7, if not all 7 days a week. You know, every once in a while, sure, I'll have some sort of cheat meal. You know, I'll have pizza or, you know, a slice of cheesecake or something like that. But otherwise, you know, I'm eating chicken breast and, you know, fat-free organic milk, natural peanut butter, low-fat cottage cheese, steak, eggs, salad, you know, turkey breasts, shrimp, some pasta, stuff like that. So I'm doing, you know, what I can throughout my entire week, as opposed to making one giant effort like once a week. So that's kind of how I would compare the different magical streams. I don't know if that makes sense to you or anyone else listening.
It makes sense to me. Along the same lines, I suppose, but a little bit different is my dig on this thing. The whole purpose, the whole concept of ceremonial and ritual magic is the psychodramatic buildup to a climax of power and then releasing that. Now, that kind of effort is for something that kind of effort is necessary for something that's going to be like huge in proportion.
Right.
For instance, you're not going to do a banishing ritual for an ex-girlfriend who won't leave you alone on the fucking on the phone, or she's driving by your work or whatever. You're not going to use that kind of build up for something so minuscule when there are tools available to you in the category of lesser magic And even in the realm of the mundane, which would make it, you know, more manageable, at least in terms of your own personal energy,
right.
You know, to accomplish these things. I mean, to go into this huge ceremonial ritual process just to do something minute or not to do anything at all, which a lot of people will do these rituals just to do them with no real intent, you know, at the end of it. You know, I equate it to, you know, killing an ant with a fucking sledgehammer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's unnecessary.
Right.
And it takes a lot more out of you than, say, grabbing a newspaper and swatting it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, along the same parallel as what you're saying, you know, you have to measure these things. You have to be responsible when you're using these things. And by responsible, not only responsible for the outcome at the end of it all, but responsible for the resources that you're using in the meantime. You know, a good formula for any magician to use in determining whether they're going to use this approach or that approach is just to take, you know, this a simple cost versus, you know, benefit versus necessity, and, you know, weigh those things. And if it looks like, you know, the cost and the necessity of it is tolerable and, you know, the benefits are rewarding without being, you know, too taxing, then that's when you take that particular approach. You know, one of the great things that chaos magic gave us was it gave us the idea that you could use any set of methods from any, you know, particular path or following and apply them, you know, to a particular situation. When, you know, this is more congruent with the ordinary world and, you know, the aspect that, you know, there are all these kind of tools available to you. You know, and just picking the right tool to do the task makes the task that much easier.
Right. Yeah. I definitely use the right tool for the job. I totally agree with that. And I still do use, you know, rituals, like more traditional, you know, heavy, elaborate rituals every once in a while. Between 1 and 3 times a year, because sometimes for all the little things you do throughout the day, every day, sometimes it requires one giant Herculean effort every once in a while to just, you know, shake things up or stimulate new growth and things like that. So, yeah, when we were discussing, you know, the validity of greater black magic and elaborate ceremonies and rituals last week, I didn't want to come off as, you know, don't do this or that's old stuff and this is much better. You know, hopefully people will use a combination.
I think that that's ideal. Again, if something isn't working for you any longer, throw it away.
Right. Or put it on the back burner and give something else a try for a while. And, yeah, maybe not throw it away, but put it in the attic or the basement. Just kind of, you know, keep it nearby just in case you need it. But don't use it as a crutch when you don't have to.
This, in my opinion, is the danger of getting trapped within a particular paradigm. And you by adhering to a paradigm by default, you know, you're automatically endorsing particular dogmas, you know?
Right.
And I think that that's, you know, where people have their great fails, their great falls. They, you know, they allow themselves to become victim to a dogmatic mentality.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, this is, I'm doing this because this is how we've always done this.
Right.
You know, versus I'm doing this because this is the best tool for the job.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're talking about, you know, doing these big big elaborate climatic efforts, you know, just to shake things up, that in itself is it's based out of necessity. Obviously, if things needed to be shaken up, it's, well, just that. It needed to be shaken up.
Yeah.
I had a really fucking fun time on Satanic International Network's Blog Talk Radio this past Wednesday. That was a lot of fun. It was nice to kind of step outside of what me and you usually do and, you know, just kind of get a feel for what everybody else is thinking and see what kind of questions they had for me. And believe me, they had a lot of, well, not a lot, but they had some really interesting questions. So, I mean, that's always great because that gives me the ability to, do some more introspective thinking.
Yeah, I always love talking to people that don't know too much about what we do because it gives me an opportunity to not only relate to them on a different level than I'm used to and that they're used to, but, you know, you get to teach someone, you know, a little bit about your life and your own work and, you know, maybe make a friend or a valuable contact or who knows, maybe even a brother or sister in the Cthulhu cult faith. You never know.
One of the things that I really stumbled upon, man, that I guess I've just taken for granted, is people really don't understand what we're about. They really don't get it. I mean, it's not that there's not a whole, two or three different websites at this point in time dedicated specifically to our work. We have a forum with all kinds, huh?
I said at least.
At least, yeah. We have a forum with all kinds of information involved with it. We're doing this, Blog Talk Radio show weekly, and then you're posting videos regularly on YouTube, and I am too, and yet they still don't get that we understand that Lovecraft's work was, you know, a fictional novel, or at least that's how it was presented.
it's funny because as you were talking, even before you mentioned the novel thing, I was remembering that P.D. Valentine YouTube thing that he did. It's a fucking novel!
Yeah, I mean, and the thing of it is that unlike these other people, we're not trying to convince ourselves that the validity of this paradigm. You know, we're not trying to lie to ourselves and be deceitful and say, you know, this God exists, that God exists, and I know it for sure. Rather, we're saying that we are, the master of our own paradigm, and when I bring this God to life, then it exists. You know, when I choose to invoke the particular qualities associated with this God, then it exists, then it lives. You know, I think this is a much more realistic approach.
I do too. Sometimes Satanists and people like that can be very set in their ways and very hesitant to embrace new ideas. And it's hard to get people to understand what we're coming from and give us a chance before they write us off as nutcakes or, I don't know, people that take their literature too far or something like that. I don't know. So hopefully, you know, we'll just keep getting the word out there and people will eventually give us a chance when they find out that we're going to keep doing what we're doing. We're going to keep making progress, and we're going to keep influencing general consensus reality, whether they like it or not. And eventually
right,
that
and
will put us at the forefront of the left-hand path, universal thought, or whatever, you know. You know what I'm saying.
I certainly do. And it's the thing of It is when you get into conversations of this particular level, it's difficult sometimes to express things with a quality that's going to be universally understood. So my recommendation for anybody approaching the Cthulhu cult is, you know, keep an open mind, but at the same time, be extremely skeptical. You know, weigh everything.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and see stuff for yourself. I mean, don't take our word for it. Or don't take someone else's word for it, who's very critical of us. You know, do your own homework and your own research and figure out, you know, are these guys onto something? Are these guys full of shit? Or what the fuck?
One of the things that I've been approached with lately, and I'm going to throw this out here, and you know, you can respond to it, which I think you deserve to. There seems to be this opinion that you tell people what they should and shouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah?
And, well, I'd rather not name names out of courtesy, but it was due to a conversation I had last night, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. Right. I think I know that.
And
okay.
Anyhow, you know, I was quick to question that because, well, I don't consider myself to be a follower.
Right.
At all. And I think you know me well enough that you can attest for that. I'm not riding your coattail or following everything that you're doing, but rather you have something or, you know, you've come across something that I've found is working for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I mean,
so I'm...
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm, you know, and in light of that and the fact that it's working for me, I'm kind of digging my own trench alongside you.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I make it a point that, sure, I brought all these different elements and influences and ideologies and paradigms together to create sort of an all-encompassing whole. But I didn't invent Buddhism. I didn't invent Satanism. I didn't invent Gnosticism or esoteric Christianity. I didn't invent the fourth way. I didn't invent chaos or, you know, nihilism or H.P. Lovecraft or even the Cthulhu mythos. You know, I didn't create any of these things. All I did was put them together in a logical, meaningful way and present them to people as something that I believe and I think is the next step in, I don't know, evolutionary consciousness and the left-hand path. So I might be leading the way, but I don't expect people to slavishly follow me or treat me as some sort of, you know, guru or messiah. I mean, if people want to do that, that's fine. I'm not going to take advantage of them. You know, I'm going to keep advising people and teaching and leading the way as best I can. But, you know, I'm not here to take advantage of people. I'm not here for a power trip to boost my ego. I just want to help myself, the people close to me who believe in me, and as much of humanity as I possibly can.
I think that's great that you got that out there, although admittedly I think I read almost those exact words on the Cthulhu Culture Original .net website I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years ago. There was a little section there.
Oh, I did. Because a lot of things haven't changed. I still want to remain true to the principles I started with, and I think I have.
I mean, honestly, it's been an honor myself knowing you and participating and working with you. You know, I've realized that, you know, there can be chivalry amongst the damned, if you know what I'm saying.
Yes, honor among thieves. I agree.
Honor among, and I think that's a very impressive factor.
Well, good. I hope so. I hope other people will be impressed by it, I guess, or it will make an impression. I know that I wouldn't be where I am without you, Ego Diabolus, a lot of other people that have helped out and contributed along the way. That's all very important. One man can't do it alone. And that's why we have the Cult of Cthulhu, because one man can't do it alone.
Nor should one man have to do it alone.
Yeah, that's right.
I was reading a particular chapter inside of that book, the Lucifer Principle, where they talk about, where he's talking about mimes. Are you familiar with what a mime is?
Yeah, like the mimes that don't speak?
No, M-E-M-E. Maybe I'm pronouncing it wrong.
A meme? I think it's pronounced meme.
Well, maybe it is meme, but anyhow, it's a principle or a concept that bounces from mind to mind, and it's taken over what genetics originally did in terms of advancement and evolution.
Mm-hmm.
What I thought was really fascinating about it was he was discussing in particular how Karl Marx was sitting in a library, I don't know, a decade or so prior to the introduction of communism in Russia, and he was scrolling out his ideas. He was scribbling out these mimes. And it's funny because, his philosophies were very unrefined, and they didn't really have have met their true potential and meaning until later on when Lenin and I'm trying to remember what the other character's name is. I can picture him in my head, but I'm having a terrible time remembering that. When they got a hold of that particular text and they saw that those ideas resonated with their own, that's when it really came to life.
Mm-hmm. Were you thinking of Stalin, or were you thinking of someone else?
Shit. You know what? Let me open the book. I'm not that many chapters ahead of this spot at this point in time, so I should be able to go back pretty quickly and look to see.
Yeah. I have some experience with memes and people talking about such a thing. It seems like it's like a fully formed concept that takes on a life of its own, and it travels from one person to another and different groups, and it sort of exists independently of the people who are creating it or thinking it or using it. That's kind of how I think that memes are, but anyway,
that's precisely how they are.
Okay.
I'll take nothing from that because I completely and totally agree with it. They transcend things that would traditionally be grouped together. For instance, Christianity by default should be a religion that's specifically held by people of Jewish descent. However, Paul, he took that mem and he went to Rome with it, and he went to the other places with it, and that idea caught on, and the largest population now of Christians are not of Jewish descent.
Right. Yep.
All right, let's see. All right, we got Marx. There's Marx, there's Lenin. I'm trying to go through this real quick. Reading and talking is always a little bit of a pain in the butt for me, so I don't know why. I can drive and read at the same time.
There's just one thing that you read, and I'll talk. There's one thing that I wanted to mention that usually comes to mind whenever I think of communism and socialism and things like that. And no, it's not Obama, all you Fox News watchers. That the whole socialism and communism, you know, started out different. And then once someone else who was in power got a hold of it, namely Joseph Stalin, it became perverted and something completely alien and horrible compared to the original ideas of communism, which was, you know, working together and cooperation and the workers and the people, you know, owning a piece of the capital that they create. When Stalin got a hold of it, it became this, you know, I don't know, sort of bureaucratic nightmare, dystopia, where basically everybody became lower class. And I think it virtually destroyed any kind of middle class, which is a huge downfall in any society. And that's something we gotta be careful of, you know. I never want the Cthulhu cult to fall into the hands of someone like Stalin, just like the Church of Satan falling into the hands of someone not Anton LaVey. You know, that was a huge detriment to the Church of Satan philosophy and everything that Anton LaVey had created. So it's hard to stay on the righteous path, but it's very necessary. So
it was Stalin that was mentioned in the book. I just got done looking through it, and it was particularly Stalin, Lenin, and then Stalin. So
yeah, Lenin had a very idealistic and pure interpretation of you know, communism and I guess, you know, socialism, things like that. But then, yeah, like I said, once Lenin died, Stalin took over, and he completely changed things around and corrupted it. It went from a noble idea to something very degenerate and
extremely.
Well, it basically took Russia out of the First World and made it in essence a third world country. And who the fuck wants to live in a third world country if they don't have to? I mean, you know, people waiting in line for bread, and you know, your economy turning into something vodka based rather than actual money. It's, you know, silly and ridiculous and nightmarish, I guess.
I would think so. And the funny part about all of that is Gurdjieff actually emerged from that particular setting, and so did Ouspensky.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes it takes the worst kind of environment to create something really worthwhile. And that's another horrible way that the world works. You know, it takes a country ruled with an iron fist like Stalin, who murdered probably millions, if not hundreds of thousands, of his own people, to forge something that was really about positive, beneficial change in people's lives. You know, something substantial like the Fourth Way and Gurdjieff and Ouspensky and things like that. But that's the world we live in, you know. And that also reminds me of the movie The Third Man, I think. And this character, Harry Lime, played by Orson Welles, he's got this line that is pretty cool, that's for hundreds of years, where was it, like Switzerland? Like had peace and brotherly love and prosperity, and everything was fine, and they had a good government and democracy, and things were going awesome there. And the only thing that they really produced of worthwhile was the cuckoo clock. Whereas you've had civilizations that were led by dictators, and you know, it was very brutal and harsh conditions and difficult times, and those periods created, you know, different masterpieces and inventions and things that kind of helped evolve man's civilization. That's not the exact quote, but that's my abbreviated interpretation.
Awesome. I mean, that's a good enough interpretation. Listen, we're actually starting to run out of time a little bit, and there is one more thing that I really wanted to touch on this show. So forgive me, as always, because I'm about to open up another can of worms. Let's talk about Florence. Is that her name?
Who?
Florine? Florence?
Oh, Florette?
Florette, that's it.
Yeah, basically means female flower in French.
That makes sense. Well, I don't speak much French, man.
That's okay. I don't really speak it either, but I know some words.
I mean, the sad part about it is that I took French for 4 years in high school and then 2 years in college, and I really honestly retain, like, none of it.
Wow. That's too bad.
Yeah.
That's like kind of a waste of a bunch of classes.
it's sad because during the time that I was taking it, it was great. I had it very well in my, you know, I had very well a good understanding of it and could use it very well. But the problem, yeah. The problem I guess I had was that. What I really wanted to learn was Gaelic, traditional Gaelic, and
yeah. Well, I suppose they didn't teach that in school.
No, I couldn't get it. And from what I was told, French was as close as you got to learning to speak Gaelic without actually speaking Gaelic. So. My plan was to, you know, retain an understanding of how the mechanics of the French language worked, and then from there use that as a tool to, to push on to actually studying and understanding and using Gaelic. Because unfortunately, my great grandfather, who was the last person in my family to speak it, he passed away before I really got a chance to pick up much of it from him.
Yeah, that's actually a great example of how a mindset can alter the development of, you know, whatever we're getting into, whatever we're trying to learn. You know, since you went in with a mindset of like, well, I just want to get the basics so then I can go on and, you know, learn this other language which I really care about. If instead of that mindset you had gone in and been like, well, there's a lot of cool French things that I'm interested in and want to know about, and I really want to get better at learning this language, so then maybe I can go to France sometime or somewhere in Canada and speak it fluently with people, then that might have altered the entire chain of events of your learning of French, and by now, you know, maybe you'd be like, you know, you could speak it just like a native French speaker or something.
It's possible. I would think that you're probably right. I believe that my approach at the time was misguided because I was young. And
oh, sure.
So that's,
I've done shit like that too. Yeah, I'm not, you know, that's a very human thing to do. You know, you do something not because it's in your best interest or because there could be some advantage down the road. usually you do stuff because you have to at the time. Like, you know, someone wants you to mop the floor. Well, you know, you mop it. You don't really care how the floor looks or how it gets mopped. You know, your job is to mop the floor. You do it as quickly as you can, you know, and then you move on. And that also kind of reminds me of that line from Gurdjieff, that, you know, if you're scrubbing the floor the right way, the way it should be scrubbed, that's more important and more beneficial than writing 10 books.
Right.
Same kind of thing.
Right.
But I'm guilty of that too, a lot, you know. So, something for people
to think about. My approach was definitely misguided at that point in time, but I'm, you know, still I'm not disappointed in my experience. I mean, at least when I hear people speaking French to me, I know what they're saying.
Well, it's good. Yeah, it's probably retain one or two things that you're like, oh, yeah.
Well, the weird part about...
go ahead.
No, well, that's cool. We can cut it off there and just let you finish out. We only got a couple minutes left.
Oh, I was just... You started off asking about Florette. I was just wondering if you actually had a specific question or two that I could answer for you.
Oh, certainly. First, have you experienced her yet?
I have. Twice.
You have? Awesome. And the sensation, is it freaky or?
It's a little freaky. It's a little weird, yeah. Because she's, you know, not real. She's made of silicone. She's extremely heavy, so just getting her in different positions is a chore. And then she's very, very firm, which to some people is great. I don't mind it, but I do like a softer touch, a softer kind of woman or softer feel. So I would change that if I had my way. But yeah, the feeling is good. I've experienced two out of the three orifices, the vagina and the anal passage. So they both felt pretty good. You know, not the best I've ever had, but by far not the worst. So she's probably a little bit above average.
A little bit above average. Mm-hmm. Now, that's actually kind of sad because by average, what you mean is your entire experience, which up until this point in time has been particularly dominated by actual living beings, correct?
Yeah, I suppose. Well, I don't know. Yeah, maybe she's about average. If I had to put a number on it, I'd say I've been with somewhere between 70 and 75. And I would put her maybe halfway, about halfway, in comparison with the feel of different women I've been with.
Big score.
Yeah,
that says,
in that way, it's very nice.
Yeah.
She came with a little vial of like Paris Hilton perfume or something, so I spread some of that on her the second time. And it actually helped, because then she smelled more like a real woman, like perfume. And that was more enticing or more erotic to me, because I could, you know, she smelled like a real woman, like a stripper or something. So that helped.
Oh, certainly. Well, we've got just about a minute left, V. And I mean, I'm sure we could go on with this forever, but let's just encourage people next week to actually call in and ask some questions.
That would be great. Maybe next week we'll talk more about sex and porn and strippers and, I don't know, lube, whatever.
All right. On that note, man, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Anything you want to say in particular?
Not really.
All right. I'm done. Well, we're the fuck out of here.